On radio. On radio. More of the good stuff. CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Cindy Siwe Van Sail at DOCSINDI on Twitter. And welcome to the Health Hour on this nippy Monday morning. So this morning we're speaking about multiple sclerosis. And I must tell you, it's one of those conditions that for me completely freaks me out. Primarily because it's an unpredictable disease. And I know that we've made great advances as scientists as to what multiple sclerosis is. We haven't really figured out what exactly causes it. And yeah, I know that when I hear the word multiple sclerosis, I completely freak out. So we have two guests this morning, and we'll be chatting to them via Skype. The first guest is Helena, and we'll also be chatting to Christelle, and they'll really be giving us, you know, a lot of information about what it is. And I'll also be playing some clips for you, just so you can hear from a person that lives with multiple sclerosis. But the first clip that I'm going to play for you before we chat to Helena is just basically giving us a background into what multiple sclerosis actually is. So take
a listen. Sclerosis, MS, is a disease that affects the central nervous system, the CNS, which consists of the brain, spinal cord, and optic nerves. Everything we do, whether it's taking a step, solving a problem, or simply breathing, relies on the proper functioning of the CNS. To understand how MS may impact the CNS, we must explore the disease at the cellular level. In the brain, millions of nerve cells called neurons continually send and receive signals. Each signal is a minute but necessary part of intricate CNS orchestrations that culminate in the actions, sensations, thoughts, and emotions that comprise the human experience. Normally, the path over which a nerve signal travels is protected by a type of insulation called the myelin sheath. This insulation is essential for nerve signals to reach their target. In MS, the myelin sheath is eroded, and the underlying wire-like nerve fiber is also damaged. This leads to a breakdown in the ability of the nerve cells to transmit signals. It is believed that the loss of myelin is the result of mistaken attacks by immune cells. Immune cells protect the body against foreign substances, such as bacteria and viruses. But in MS, something goes awry. Immune cells infiltrate the brain and spinal cord, seek out the myelin, and attack. As ongoing inflammation and tissue damage occurs, nerve signals are disrupted. This causes unpredictable symptoms that can range from numbness or tingling to blindness and paralysis. These losses may be temporary or permanent.
And that is the definition of multiple sclerosis. And, you know, in the last few seconds, you heard him speak about blindness, about paralysis, maybe temporary, maybe permanent. And I think for many of us, we just have this overwhelming fear of multiple sclerosis. So it's a good morning to you, Helena.
Elena's not on now. It's Christelle.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Hi, Christelle. Thank you for joining us this morning on Cliff Central. So, Christelle, I mean, you heard the clip, and I know that you're involved with the Multiple Sclerosis Society. You do a lot of awareness around this condition. Just tell me a bit of how you got involved with working with multiple sclerosis.
Sure. Let me just give you. Helena's name that she's known by really in the world is None.
None.
So
okay.
When you talk to her, you'll get a lot of more information about the Multiple Sclerosis Society. She's the director of the society.
Okay.
And I got involved because I am actually a person with multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
So, yes. So I got to know None because of her involvement with the society, obviously, and I had some questions and then I met her, and I mean, so, and then I became involved, and I was a member from about a year after I met Don. I was a member of the Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just your diagnosis. How were you diagnosed? What symptoms did you have? How old are you now? How long have you been living with multiple sclerosis? I think let's start there.
Okay, I was 29 at the time. Which was in the year 2000. So I'm 44 now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 29 years old, and I woke up one morning with a blind spot in my eye. It felt like there's this, you know, when it feels like you've got sleep in your eye and you can't see clearly out of the one eye.
Yeah.
So I woke up with that, and I was visiting. I lived in Pretoria at the time, and I was visiting my mom in Vereeniging. And I woke up, and it was a public holiday, and it's September, incidentally. That's why I remember it so clearly. So, and then I got into the shower, and I stood with my eye under the water directly, and I was trying to wash my eye out. And then when I got out of the shower, it was still like this. I mean, I don't know the English word. It was like this dwarf thing in your eye.
Mm.
And it didn't obviously go away. And then the next day, I went to the optometrist, and I said, something's wrong with my eye. And I, you know, my first reaction was, I think I'm going blind. And the optometrist looked and said, I see nothing. I'm going to refer you to an eye specialist. Sent me to an eye specialist. The eye specialist sent me for an MRI.
Yeah.
Which is the magnetic resonancing imaging.
Yes.
And then looked and said, I think you should go to a neurologist.
Mm.
To the neurologist. And, you know, I hope not everybody has this experience, but the neurologist, and I can say this because she doesn't live in South Africa anymore.
Yeah.
She was this old maid. She was like probably in her 50s, not married. Her life was her job. And she looked at me and she said, you have MS.
Wow.
And not a lot of people, when you tell them that, know what you're actually talking about. But I did, because I knew someone who had it.
Okay.
And I started crying. And she said to me, why are you crying? You're not going to get married anyway. You're 29.
Oh, my goodness, Christelle. Was that her response?
That was her response to me. So, you know, it was quite a negative thing. But now, after the fact, what I learned was then, this is often one of the first symptoms that people with MS get. It's called optic neuritis. So your optic nerve is affected.
Mm-hmm.
So she gave me cortisone tablets. I took the cortisone tablets for about 3 weeks, and then it cleared up. And that's what the thing in MS is. Often it is, we call it relapses. So you get a relapse, something happens. Like, for example, your eye, you get optic neuritis. Or you actually can't lift your leg. It's dragging. Or your hands have these numbness and tingling in your hands, and you think, like, is there a nerve pinched or whatever? But then it will subside and go away.
Mm.
The treatment is often cortisone. Most of the times, intravenous cortisone, not oral cortisone.
Okay.
So that's the one type of MS where, basically, we're saying there's four types. There's the relapsing remitting, which most people have.
Okay, so that's the commonest one, the relapsing remitting.
Correct.
Okay.
So, and that's what most people have. They get a relapse, it's not going well, and then it gets better. But it's not to say when it gets better, they're all fine in between, because there's a lot of other symptoms that are things that just don't go away, like fatigue. I mean, and we're not saying fatigue is not a thing where, oh, we all feel tired, you know. Oh, I understand exactly how you feel. I feel just as tired. It's not the same. It's a real, real fatigue. It's you just actually can't lift your head. But not everybody has that.
Okay.
So that's the thing with MS. That's a difficult thing. Is not the symptoms aren't the same for everybody. Not one person is the same as the next.
Yeah, and so in your case over the years, Christelle, do you have a GP that you follow up with? I mean, what in terms of your long-term care, what does your follow-up involve? And does medical aid cover any costs? Is this all out of your pocket? How are you coping?
You know what? It's, as I said, it's different for everybody. So the thing is that you've got to have quite a good relationship with your neurologist,
mm-hmm.
because that will be the person treating you. The thing is that you can't predict the cause of MS. You can't say, like when I was 29 and I'm diagnosed, so that the first is relapsing remitting.
Yes.
But they can't say, will it go over into secondary progressive MS, which is next, or will it actually go primary progressive, or, you know, it's so, and now even we look at, there are cases where there's secondary progressive MS where the progression goes slowly, nothing really gets better. There are no clear relapses, but there are also people with secondary progressive where they still experience relapses. But in my case, I was 29 at the time. I was like devastated, but I'm also quite a positive person, so I thought this is not going to get me under. But I didn't think the course of my MS would be this bad, because I read up and it said 10% of people end up in wheelchairs and that sort of thing.
Well, that's what we know. I mean, seriously, when I hear MS, I'm just thinking paralysis, you're going to die. You'll just stop breathing one day and it's over. That's the impression that I have.
Yeah, you see, MS is not a fatal disease. It's not like when you diagnose, I think a lot of people also nowadays, because US is such a prominent figure, people compare it with MND, the motor neuron disease.
Yes.
It's very different. Motor neuron disease is not an autoimmune disease, and MS is.
Mm.
And with motor neuron, people get diagnosed, and they normally say 5 years probably. With MS, there's no such thing.
Okay.
So there are people that I know. I mean, I've now obviously with my involvement with the society, I've met a lot of people with MS, and I've met people, they were diagnosed 20 years ago, and they're still absolutely fine. I was diagnosed in 2000, which is, 15 years ago. I am now in a wheelchair. So in my case, it progressed. And, you know, I was also, the medications that people go on, we call them disease-modifying drugs, because really they're not a cure. There is no cure for MS. So, and a lot of people benefit by these disease-modifying drugs. It's interferons. They inject themselves either every second day or weekly. But in my case, I also used those disease-modifying drugs, but clearly it didn't make any difference in my progression.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a, I'm going to try this, but I'm not sure that it's going to work, you know.
And I think that's where the unpredictability, Christelle, that's a whole unpredictability of the condition that sure. I'm speaking about. But tell me, Christelle, let's just go back to the fact that you're now currently wheelchair bound, but prior to that, in terms of the disease modifying agents, were you paying these out of your pockets, or were you are you on medical aid? How has that worked? I'm really curious about that.
I'm on medical aid, so for me, and you know, it's very, very expensive. I mean, at that time, in the first year when I was diagnosed, they wouldn't approve it, the medical aid, because there were criteria things and all of that. But now, MS is one of the 26, there are in all medical aids, there are 26 prescribed minimum benefits for
conditions that they have to pay for. Yeah,
correct. And so medical aid does pay for it, but you've got to have a good medical aid. I mean, the disease modifying drugs are now around, I think it was 10,000 at the time when I used it.
Mm.
And it's now around 12, I think.
Yeah, very expensive.
It's very expensive. It's an expensive illness, and you know, when you start getting things like wheelchairs, and you've got to put grab rails up in your bathroom, and some people may have to make their shower bigger. So you know, it's hard, and some people have to get full time carers.
Yeah.
So there are the cases where it's very bad. I mean, I know of a young guy who was diagnosed 8 years ago or something, and he's blind. He's totally dependent on carers. He can't do anything for himself.
Yeah.
But those are the isolated cases.
Mm.
Mostly people have relapses and they feel bad and, you know, that sort of thing. But it's actually what I say to people, it's actually sometimes even worse for those people, because it's an invisible disease.
Yeah.
So some people may think you're just putting it on and you're pretending like you're feeling sick. And, you know, actually, in my beginning days, my first 7 years, basically,
yeah,
I was still dancing on tables. And doing all the hangouts in discos. I was still young. I was just living my life.
Mm.
And I had a very corporate job. I worked in Sandton. So, you know, and I'm one of the lucky ones because the company that I work for allowed me to work from home. So for the past 5 years, I've worked from home.
Okay, so they have adapted. They adapted everything to suit your situation.
Correct, but there aren't many people as lucky as I am. So a lot of people are medically boarded because they can't actually. Maybe I'm a bank teller. I can't go to the bank and stand the whole day anymore because I walk with a crutch. So and I just can't because my legs won't carry me to stand the whole day. So.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't work, and that obviously impacts even more on the problem of this expensive illness, and now you don't have a job.
Yeah, sure. It's Well, if you just tuned in, I mean, I'm chatting to Christelle, who is living with multiple sclerosis, and we're chatting about the condition and just living with the condition. You can call in 0861-555-189. You can tweet us at cliffcentral.com, or you can tweet me at DocSindy, DocSindy. Christelle, when exactly did you become wheelchair bound?
I would say, you know what, it was so gradual, I can't even give you an exact date. But as I said, I was diagnosed in 2000.
Yes.
I moved from Johannesburg to Cape Town in 2005 for love.
That's sweet.
And the love is still there, so he's awesome.
Oh, that is so sweet.
Yeah, and I mean, when he met me, he knew about the whole diagnosis and the whole story. I was already diagnosed. So, you know, there are those people that just amaze you. So, and then I moved and I was still fine. And I would say about end 2008, I started feeling like now I can't. And then I went to the mall, for example, and I couldn't get from the entrance of the mall back to my car. I was on my high heels.
Yeah.
And I just, it was too far. I couldn't. And then I started realizing, okay, now this is progressing a bit.
Yeah.
And when I sort of looked, and then I started walking with one crutch, still driving. Everything was still fine. I was walking with one crutch, and then I started going onto two crutches, and my left-hand side of my body was more affected than the right, which still is the case. So then I sold my car because it was a normal manual car, and then I bought an automatic little car because I couldn't do the clutch anymore.
Mm.
So, but then I could still drive. And then I started walking with two crutches, and then I started, as we went out of the house to events or whatever, I would take the one crutch and hold onto Francis' arm on the other hand. And then eventually when I started going to the mall, I realized I couldn't do this. I just couldn't. So I would go in a wheelchair. So then I got a wheelchair, and my sister-in-law would fetch me, and then I'd take the wheelchair when I got out of the house.
Yeah.
And then... yeah, it just sort
of... gradual.
It's gradual. So you can't say, but you real... And, you know, it's... I mean, I could be quite a judgmental person. So I would always think these people with MS that are in wheelchairs, I think they just gave up. And you know what? It's actually not the case. You just realize, I can't walk anymore.
So you're in your mind, you want to lift that leg and you want to move forward and you just can't.
Exactly. So, yeah, it just went very gradually. So, I guess it's good in a way because you sort of have to adapt as you go along.
Mm. Yeah. And just in terms of your emotions and dealing with it, I mean, have you ever found yourself slipping into depression? Like, how do you cope, Christelle? I mean, you sound quite upbeat, but how have you managed to cope with your new life, as it were?
You know, I think the depression is definitely one of the things that people fall into. I think I'm not that way inclined, but having said that, I mean, I had adversity from a young age in my life, so I had to deal with things. My father died when I was 11, but I have a mother who bounces back from everything in life. So I think it was a good example. But I think it's also my natural disposition. And having, I mean, in saying this, I'm not saying I don't have moments, because of course I have those days when I actually think I actually just can't take the suckling anymore.
Yeah.
And I just cry. But you know what? You have to lift yourself up. And I'm fortunate in my life, I have really, really good friends.
Okay.
So I've got a great support structure. And as I said, Francesca is this awesome person in my life. So, and I've got great family around, my sister-in-law, my brother. So, you know, my mom lives far, but she's always just a phone call away. And if there's something I need, I know she'll get on the first plane. So I think, you know, if you surround yourself with positive people also, and you know what, you also have to, this is what I always say to people as well. You've got to realize that people are going to talk behind your back. I know my friends, the one will say to the other one, oh, you should see what Christelle looks like now.
Oh, Christelle.
But you know what? What I'm saying is it's not a bad thing. People don't mean it in a bad way. You've got to take it in. People are going to talk behind your back, and it's very much only because they care. You know, it's a natural thing. So I just think you've got to not take everything personally, and you've got to live your life and do the best you can with what you have at that current moment in time. So it's just a little bit more planning now. When I go out to a restaurant, I still love, I phone before I go and I say, do you have disabled facilities? Can I get in with my wheelchair? Is the toilet close by? Because in a lot of people with MS and me as well, the bladder is affected. You know, so you just plan a little bit better. And I love going to see live shows. I'm a big fan of Karen Zoiden. And when she's somewhere, then I phone and I go, can I get in? Is there in? You know, so you just plan your life differently.
And I must tell you, I mean, when I, you know, I guess we go through life, we see people in wheelchairs, we see people with crutches, and we just walk past. We're not even aware or cognizant of the struggles that they're going through. Like just the fact that you might get to a place and there's no lift for a wheelchair, you wouldn't be able to access that place.
Exactly. I was talking to a friend about it yesterday, and I went to a hospital in August last year.
Yeah.
And it's a hospital, okay? And they said, I wanted to go to the wheelchair toilets, and they told me where it is, and I went there. I couldn't close the door because the space in the wheelchair toilet was too small. When you have your foot rests on your wheelchair, you can't close the door.
Oh,
I'm in a fortunate position where I can take the foot rests off. I know how to do it quickly. But there are people, not even people with MS, just any other disabled person. How do you build a hospital and build a wheelchair plan? So I always say, I think people who plan wheelchair spaces, who plan, I mean, sometimes they make an incline so freaking skeins that you actually can't get from the bottom to the top. You know, people should get into wheelchairs and see, is this going to work?
Well, I mean, that's why we have, I mean, that's why it's good to have people like you who are, you know, yeah, no, gosh, I can't believe this. You know, it's things we take for granted.
For everybody out there, don't park on the disabled parking for 5 minutes because that is open.
Oh, Crystal, I'm guilty of that. Minutes,
yeah,
but I don't do it anymore.
In 5 minutes, the one with the wheelchair will come.
Yeah. No, I don't do that anymore. I think I did it twice and then I don't do it anymore because I realize that I'm being extremely selfish. And you're right. In those 5 minutes that I've nipped into the Woolworths, someone could come and need that space.
Absolutely.
Wow. And in terms of your family, how does your family cope with your condition?
You know, I think it's also different for different families, I almost want to say, because some people say that they just don't get any support and their family think, you know, why are you always so tired and why don't you want to do things with us? But as I said, my family are quite good. I mean, we still do things, and I think it's sad for a parent if I think, you know, if I look at my, but my mom is not the type of person to cry and feel sorry for me. But I think in her binnenkamer almost, I want to say, you know, she would think it's so bad that this happened to my daughter. I think it's like any parent would not want anything like this for their child. But, you know, it's like Franch always says, the life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
And I think your mother as well, I mean, I'm sure by this stage she now understands that it wasn't really her. I mean, it's we know that multiple sclerosis is the cause. We don't really know what the cause is. We know that certain areas, people that live further away from the equator are more likely to have it, but it's not a hereditary condition.
Not at all. And, you know, I think so. Yes, some people may think, what did I do? Did I do something wrong?
Did I give this to my child?
But it's not hereditary. Nobody knows what causes multiple sclerosis.
That's
I mean,
that's important.
A lot of theories about it could have been a virus you picked up somewhere, or maybe not, or, you know, but we don't know. I think if we knew what caused multiple sclerosis, we would be closer to the cure for multiple sclerosis.
Okay, Christelle, well, we're going to take a little break now, and we'll be back afterwards. But, thank you so much for giving us insight into what it is to live with multiple sclerosis. I mean, you're very honest and open. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye-Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye-Gold, we are one.
CliffCentral.com. You get up in the morning, and your day's always starting with a reminder that you've got MS.
Every single day. Because one of the things about this illness, to help counterbalance all the negative effects, is really, there's three things I pay attention to. Stay on top of my medication, stay on top of exercise, and stay on top of eating right. So every day I get up in the morning, I start my day off with this bag.
So how many are there here? I can't even count them.
There's about 27.
Oh my goodness.
There are about 6 different medications for MS. Mm-hmm. All of them are injectable.
Excuse me, just a second. That's not shoot down too far. No, only fine. You can keep it on air. Okay, yeah.
365 days a year, every day.
Wait, what these do in many ways is remind you that you're sick, though.
Every single day.
Your daily metronome is around taking pills.
You should ask my wife if there is the one thing that she'll tell you that I say consistently is, can I just forget it one day? Once. Can.
Part of this whole story that sort of would drive me crazy if I were you. You got a disease without an obvious cause, without a cure. That you don't have a ton of control over, even though you can control how you respond to it. There must be a day when you go, you know, it's not fair. It's just not right. It's not going to be a good day for me.
I have those days. Damn it. I'm tired of being sick. I'm tired of being sick. And if I spend less time focusing on how miserable I am, but understanding that there's some way that I can take that misery and turn it into the benefit for people bigger than me, I start thinking about stuff outside of me, that stops hurting.
Whoa, that was intense. And that's a clip of Dr. Oz speaking to a man that's living with multiple sclerosis. And yeah, that's what we're speaking about this morning. A condition that I know as the medical doctor, I misunderstand, and I have a very doomsday approach or understanding of MS, but it's really great. I mean, chatting to Christelle was really eye-opening. And now on the line, we have Non Smith, and she'll be telling us more about the Multiple Sclerosis Society. So thank you so much for joining us, Non.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cindy.
I called you Helena earlier on, and then Christelle reminded, she pointed out that the world knows you as Non, but your official name is Helena. And so where did the nickname Non come from?
It's just like your mother started calling me Nonny. My grandmother was Oh Nonna, and it just stuck through the years. So during my school years, I was called Helena, but my nickname stuck, and that's where I am, Nonny.
Okay, well, no, thank you so much for being on the show. So, so we've been speaking about multiple sclerosis. I mean, a condition that's well, not well understood by many of us. And what's always of interest to me when I come across people that are part of organizations with this, you know, special interest in certain conditions is how you got involved with this, you know, with the specific organization. So how did you get involved with the MS Society?
Well, there was a person with family, with MS in our family. And it happened many, many years ago. It started out in the 80s already. So I've been exposed to MS since then. In fact, the interesting thing about the history of where I got involved was in the 80s, there were not even MRI scanners in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So the first ones that came to the Tygerberg Hospital when it was really a smart establishment. And the other one went to Joburg General Hospital. And those were the only two places. And at that stage, the radiographers who did the MRI scan and read the results were actually better informed and than the neurologists. Mm. I remember the radiographer saying to the neurologist, "Look here, doctor, this is what MS looks like." And then they showed them these white little spots, which we call lesions.
Mm. And so when you formed the society, just out of interest, how many members belong to you? How many members do you have as part of the society?
Well, that's the representation of the members of the society is not a true reflection of the people with MS in South Africa, as it's very difficult to get a hold of everybody, as you can understand.
Yeah.
So we have about just more than 1,000 people on our database.
Okay.
With MS. But there's definitely about 5,000 people with MS in South Africa.
Mm.
And the ones that we have are obviously the ones that's been living with MS now for many years, longer than Christelle. People have been living with MS for the last 30, 40 years.
Okay.
And the new ones that are not on the database are ones that can go to a doctor, has a medical aid, been taken on an MRI, put on a regime, and they don't necessarily know or have the need until they hear about us, like on a program like yours, which is awesome.
Okay. And just, I mean, you heard the clip I played before I started chatting to you. Just the amount of medication that people have to take. That's interesting to me. I mean, on average, how much would a person that had to pay cash for their medication be paying? Do you have any idea, Non?
Yes, I have a very good idea because that's part of my job, is to intervene and the advocacy with medical aids and so on. It can cost anything from prescribed medicine and injectables, anything from 12,000 to 29,000. It's not payable by the normal person. You have to have a medical aid. And one of the huge accomplishments that the MS Society has achieved was to set up the prescribed minimum benefit guidelines 3 years ago. So it's already outdated, but it cost the society in the excess of 150,000 rand to put that together with a panel of 9 neurologists in South Africa, and it was accepted. That was the biggest accomplishment, to get medical aids to have to pay out the medication because it's a PMB. But then they still... fight. They still find ways of declining, and then we take them to court. Yeah. And we have the most amazing support of a person with MS who's also a medical doctor, and she's also an attorney. She lives in Pretoria. Her name is Dr. Samantha Gregory.
Okay.
So she does that pro bono stuff for us.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because you know what? You need to take these medical aids on. I mean, I see it with the work that I do. I work with HIV, and they're always looking for a loophole. And, you know, you have to have someone speaking for the patients and making sure that the thing, the thing gets done, the correct thing gets done.
That's our job. Yep. Yeah, that's what we do. And, you know, we've just at the moment, we're busy with the Genesis against the Minister of Health.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a draw, sort of like. But, yeah, it's not easy for the person out there, because the medical aid, if you're an uninformed person, most of us are uninformed. We pay our medical aid and we think things are going to be fine. But then when something happens and you have to accept what they say, many people do, unless they hear that there's a way that we can help and support them. So it's important for people to know that they must not just accept the answer of some kind of excuse.
Yeah, no, we can't help you. No, that's true. That is so true, Non. And tell me, in terms of the demographics of MS, I know that, I mean, I was reading about it the other day, that the further away you are from the equator, the more likely you are to have, not more likely, but they found that people that suffer from MS are people that generally don't live around the equator, and they figure that it's to do with sunlight, exposure to sunlight, and possibly vitamin D. What I want to know, just from what you've seen, have you seen any patterns in terms of demographics? Does it mostly affect white people? Does it affect black people? What have you seen in your time with the society?
Yeah, very interesting question, and I really like to talk about that, because in my lifetime, it was supposed to be the so-called white disease.
Mm-hmm.
And MS was not in Africa. Now, that excludes the African-American, because MS in America, under the African-Americans, is rife as much as in white people.
Okay.
There's no difference. Yeah, okay. You know, Barack Obama's wife, Michelle's mother, had MS.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, they have MS. In Africa, there were no MS recorded. Now, there are many, many reasons. They could be that they didn't get to a doctor, or they don't have medical aid, they were not informed, they looked after their own, and so on and so forth. But what has happened in the last 7-8 years, black people, and now I'm excluding brown and Indian, because brown and Indian have MS as much as white people. So it's quite controversial if we say it's white, because Indian and colored feel very excluded because they suffer as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
But the black people that have been diagnosed lately, to my knowledge, are people who are in jobs and they have access to medical aids and they go to a neurologist and they get diagnosed. Many of them have the same symptoms, but they don't go that route.
Okay, so you're saying that we as clinicians are actually missing the symptoms of MS. So we could actually have more people with MS, you know, more black people living with MS, but we're missing it. We're not diagnosing it.
I'm absolutely sure of that.
Yeah.
But there's also another point that I find very interesting, and that's it's true. It was always true that further from the equator, and MS was called the Nordic, the ice disease. Nordic countries started in Scotland and Norway and so on. And it's true because there's so much MS there that there's MS cities around the world. So in South Africa, it's quite a rarish disease, but it's picking up. In the last 12 months, I've spoken to 158 newly diagnosed people.
Yep.
If that doesn't make you, you know, raise your eyebrows. And the other thing about the closer to the equator, people who live in Ghana, Botswana, of course, Zimbabwe, but that's not. They phone me. They get hold of us on the internet. They phone me and they tell me that they've been diagnosed and that nobody knows what their condition is about. And they are lost because there they are in the middle of Africa being diagnosed with MS. There's no support structure. They don't know anything about it. And the family has no idea. So it's almost like the women. And you know, this is a, 2/3 of women disease.
Oh, so it primarily affects women.
Yeah. Lots of men have it, but it's, I would say 2 out of 3 is women. And so women in Africa, they sit there and they are desperate for help and support, desperate for somebody to explain to their family what really is happening, because you know it's an invisible disease and you know people think you are actually making it up because they can't see what you're telling them.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I was reading through the 4 different types of MS and that was really interesting to me. But just on a day-to-day basis, what is a typical, like for example, Christelle is now wheelchair bound. What would a typical day in Christelle's life look like? I mean, do you have bad days when you can't get out of bed, or are you pretty much stable and you're able to do things and get on with it?
You know, I would really like to give you the positive answer, but it's not true. It's terrible. It's a disgusting condition. You wake up in the morning and you have that same feeling every day of I can't lift my head. The difference is the person's attitude and how they are going to tackle this condition, MS, whether they're going to live with it or whether they're going to deal with it. And it's very important to understand that there are people who are not naturally inclined to be positive. So there's a huge amount of people that are going through very, very bad situation. Christelle is going through the same, but people like Christelle who have decided that I will have a positive outlook, I will try today, and I will make, if I can use her as an example, she really tries and she succeeds very well in keeping up her relationships with friends and family. Mm. She knows that that is her source to the outside world. She, it's very, people within us are mostly demanding. They are frustrated. Mm. They are, they feel isolated. They feel alone. And those feelings naturally turn one into being a little bit of an aggressive, wanting, needy person. You don't understand. I feel like this. You don't understand. Every day I feel like this. If you keep doing that cycle, your life becomes a misery. The person with MS who realizes that it's nobody's fault that they've got MS and that you have to get on with it and that you have to live with your family and friends in your house and that you must make it as easy as possible for everybody because it's not the spouse's fault. Yeah. And that we must take care of the children in houses that grow up with people with MS. If one of the parents have MS, because this is primarily not a children's disease.
Yes.
So you grow up in this house where your one parent has a chronic condition which deteriorates.
Yeah.
The other one becomes the breadwinner. The other one becomes the sole look after the family type.
Yeah.
The one with MS has got this. You cut me out of this. I can't make a decision. I've got MS and I'm dealing with myself now. So there's always this huge donga being formed. And the sad thing for me is the fact that people with MS relationships in their marriages are not naturally strong. They have to work harder than you and I who don't have that challenge in our marriage. They have, and nobody's educated to do that. You know, nobody's been taught that if you have a third partner in the house in the form of MS, the chronic disease, that you will have to work harder on your relationship. You will have to sit down and discuss and say, there are going to be days I do feel like this. You have to understand. And the partner will have to come to terms with that. Like Christelle said, her partner has from the beginning been informed about what's going to happen, and he's actually amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There are many like that, but we're now talking about the challenges of people, and there are also many not like that. So part of what we do in the society is to almost sniff out those situations, because people don't naturally talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I pick it up, then we do facilitating. We wish we were big enough in South Africa to have a center where we could holistically treat everybody.
Mm.
But the easiest thing, or the thing that we have to understand, is that our structure in South Africa is third world. And sorry to say, but MS has always been regarded as a white disease.
Mm.
There's no support from our government side. They don't even recognize MS as anything. We fight to find some airtime for it. Nobody knows about MS.
Mm.
So it's very difficult to help somebody in terms of come to us, and we have to facilitate. So we send them out to outside therapists like psychologists. But because MS is not well known, you can't send them to any psychologist. You have to start educating a psychologist in a area or city, and keep referring to the same person so that they can also start experiencing MS.
Yeah.
And understand the challenges. So, yeah, it's quite a challenging thing, but we're succeeding with that. I'm very, very fortunate to say that I am surrounded by unbelievable professional people who I can call anytime, night or day, and they would not hesitate to help us and step in and from Dr. Anita Rose, who's overseas in, she's my vice chairman.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in the UK. She's a neuropsychologist. She works in an MS center.
Mm-hmm.
She visits South Africa once a year and come and do workshops with us. And she is well known already. And she's at the at the click of a button, she's available if anybody's in a crisis. So, and then we have the attorney, we have legal services available, we have a fantastic communication line on our Facebook profile. We have a closed group of MSers there. Mm-hmm. Where you have to have MS and it's monitored. It's not just like any other, you know, people say, I'm not on Facebook. And I say, well, you know, you better do, because it's important to understand if you use Facebook and Twitter right, it can be an amazing tool.
Yes.
And we have to move with the times.
Yes.
And it has opened the world to hundreds of people with MS in South Africa, because everybody's got a phone.
Yes.
And couple of years when I started that group,
yeah,
I was excited because I just knew that if I could put a phone in every MS's hand that I know of, and I can teach them to go online, then I can speak to them whenever. And that was the amazing thing. So we have about 450 people in that group.
Yeah.
It's a monitored group. We have had a study, the University of Stellenbosch, Dr. Krishna Pretorius has done a study and a published journal on the group, on how people react, who's in the group, what information is available, how do they feel, how do they feel those that talk a lot, how do they feel those that don't talk a lot, why don't you talk a lot, when is it, you know, it's a fantastic group. I'm very, very proud to say the professionals inside of that group is also there on call. There's people that say, I feel down. I think I'll end my life. I can't live with this MS anymore. It's very upsetting. You can't say that in an open forum. You have to have these professionals available to talk and step in and know what to do and how to handle it next.
Yeah.
And the rest of the group, as you can imagine, has learned so much. Because if you are in the company of somebody who is that down and out, you learn a lot from an experience.
Yeah.
And it's like a wake-up call. It's not like thinking, oh, you know, I don't want to live here anymore. It's about, what about your family? What about life? What about the people you love? What
and
about
how you can forge ahead? How, yeah, looking forward with a positive attitude. I mean, the work that you guys do is absolutely phenomenal. I'm really, really impressed. And I think what you highlighted about the marriage, especially the marriage component. I mean, I'm thinking of sex life. I'm thinking of so many things that once the communication has broken down, I mean, that marriage is all, it's done. You know, it's over. But yeah, so where can we find you? Like, just give us your details. Where can we find you on Facebook? Where can we find you on Twitter? Just give us all your details so that we can put it out there and get people more aware of the Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Okay, great. Our Twitter handle is MS_South Africa. Our Facebook group is Facebook/ Multiple Sclerosis SA. If you type in Multiple Sclerosis SA on Facebook, we'll jump up immediately. We are very active.
Mm-hmm.
Once you leave a message there, we will get hold of you and we'll tell you all about the other stuff. We have a 24/7 telephone line, which is a Cape Town number, but it's it acts nationally.
Okay.
It's 021 948.
Yeah.
4160.
Okay.
And our email address is simply info@multiplesclerosis.co.za.
Okay.
And I'm so used to saying, can you spell that? And then I say, any other.
Okay. No, but thank you so much, Non. I mean, thank you so much for taking the time to share your information with us, and really great stuff that you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
Welcome. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you, Dr. Cindy.
Thank you. Bye. CliffCentral.com